You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, everyone. I am Martina Cunha, and you're listening to Backstage Talk. Welcome to Jesse and Steve Tomsko. They are the creators of Bolin the Musical. Jesse is the composer and lyricist, and Steve is the book writer. This is a new musical, and I'll let you both of you introduce yourselves.
Go ahead, Jess.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here. I'm Jesse. Like Martin said, I'm the composer lyricist for Bolin. I originally had the idea for the concept about 4 years ago and decided it is my first musical. It's my first project. So I had no idea what I was doing, and I was very daunted by the scope of the project. And so my dad is a beautiful writer and a history buff, same as me. And so I approached my dad, Steve, to see if he wanted to write the book, write the script, and he said a resounding yes.
Yeah, that's pretty much the way it was. Resounding. Well, I was intrigued and interested in it. I went, gee, I've never done that before. Why not?
Why not?
Why not?
Let's take the bull from the horns and do this thing. But Steve, you've had experience writing scripts before?
No. I've been a writer and interested in writing pretty much my entire life. I went to school for English literature and journalism. After college, I didn't get a job doing any of that. I've been in computers and information technology ever since then. But I always continued to write. I had a handful of short stories published in some local literary magazines. I've been working on a novel or two for a long time. I enjoy writing, mostly from a historical fiction kind of thing. I am a history buff. Most of what I read has been history. Jesse came up with the idea. I said, "Well, that sounds interesting." Having seen, been a big fan of A Man for All Seasons and The Six Wives of Henry VIII, a PBS series from the 70s. Yes, the 70s.
You're going to date yourself.
But it was always it's a story that just won't let go. And I thought that, well, let's see if we can do this really justice and in a way that has not been done before, which is the point. So it really it did take on it just took root, and I said, yeah, let's see what we can do with this, so far so good.
And we've both kind of been learning together, because like I said, it is my first musical as well. And I've since begun some other projects as well. But there was a lot to learn along the way. There was a huge learning curve at first. And there still is. We're still figuring it out.
Yeah, definitely a learning process for me as well. I mean, knowing, being very much involved in history, I was very much, there are only about, 100 different sources of historical material on this one subject. Where do we begin? So, it was a learning curve for me and a learning process all along the way. And it's something that you really, it gets to you. It really does.
So, Steve, you're a journalist and you studied English. And Jesse, you're a musician, I guess.
Yes, so I have always been a musician. I actually have my degree in classical voice performance, of all things. I went to Westminster Choir College in Princeton, did a Bachelor of Music there. And immediately upon graduating, I kind of thought, I don't think I really want to be an opera singer. But I had this degree and thought, well, I'm 2 months away from graduation, I might as well finish that.
Yeah, and her mother and I were thrilled about that. By the way.
So, but what I did discover in college was a love for writing. specifically through the singer-songwriter genre, because I had always been really into such artists as Joni Mitchell, Simon and Garfunkel, James Taylor. Like, I can thank my parents. I grew up listening to artists like Elton John, The Beatles, Carole King, Carly Simon, like all these like great, you know, Bob Dylan, these great folky and rock singer-songwriters. And so, and then into the 90s, when I was growing up, I was really into groups like Indigo Girls and Alanis Morissette, and Ani DiFranco made me want to play guitar. And so I discovered that I really liked the singer-songwriter world in college. I started playing some little coffee houses, and I'd do some occasional open mics. And I thought, you know, I obviously have a lot to learn. I have a lot to work on my craft, but I'm really excited by this much more than I was about pursuing a grad school degree in opera, a master's. I just didn't have that kind of fire and passion for that. As much as I did enjoy it, I still enjoy it. I enjoy going to the opera. I really think it's fantastic. But it wasn't for me so much in a career sense. But I did feel kind of a fire, lit kind of a fire at the idea of pursuing a singer-songwriter path, which I then did for a little while. And I had a lot of fun with it. I'm still doing it. I always tell people I will always be a singer-songwriter no matter where I go, what I do. But then it kind of brought me to the idea of being a storyteller, which I think as a folk singer-songwriter, you are a storyteller, that I felt like it naturally led me to musical theater composing, which I'd always had an interest in musical theater, always had a love for it.
That's amazing. And it's so exciting that this is your first musical and this is your first work together in the musical theater genre. How did this crazy project start?
I guess I'll take that one to start.
Yeah, she wrote a song.
Okay, so
the
I was
rest is history.
So I was writing one night. I was up late, very late writing, as I sometimes do. I get very inspired in the wee hours of the morning. And so I was writing and just kind of messing around. Nothing special was coming to me. And all of a sudden, I got this really random idea. I thought, what if Anne Boleyn wrote a contemporary sounding folk song from the Tower of London while awaiting her execution? It was
doesn't
so weird.
Doesn't everybody have those kind of thoughts?
As you do. And it was so out of left field, because at this point, this was like 4 years ago. This was before any whisper of a show like Six. And I hadn't seen any depictions of her. It's all of a sudden she was like in my head. And it was so weird that I almost laughed it off. But then I thought, well, this is a fun writing exercise. And so I wrote something that it came to me in the space of an hour, this like completed song, start to finish. And I was so like blown away by it. And I didn't think much more of it at the time. I went to bed feeling really happy and excited. And the next morning I went back to it and I thought, you know, I think there's something here. I think I want to maybe dive into this and tell this story with everyone's voices using this kind of folky, sort of like a layman's folk singer-songwriter kind of style. And it kind of grew from there.
But
just remind me, what song was it?
It's called More Than a Man.
Yeah,
it's not even on the show anymore. we couldn't find a place for that actual song. It'll be like a B-side someday, although it might come back in. I really don't know. We have so many songs. Like, I literally have probably 75 songs written for this show that have gone back and forth, and I don't know quite where it is right now. But
and for my part, when this started, she sent me all of this music and all of these songs. And a rough order of how it was supposed to be. And so I looked at it and went, well, gee, how do we get from this song to this song to this song to this song? How does that work?
But that's the like inexperience for you. I was like, right, here, write some script to this.
And that's how it started. And that kind of thing was like, well, gee, oh, golly.
We had a lot to learn.
What happens now? How do we do this? And so that's how we kind of both waded into it. And one thing
waited,
led to another.
That's a good word. We waded into it.
Because it was a complete, like I didn't know what I was doing. Because music theater, I came to learn, is unlike, it's not a play. It's not a play with music. It's not just music. It's its own thing. which I had never sat down and said to myself, gee, I wonder if I should write a musical. And because, of course, I didn't do that. I have some musical background.
My dad's a drummer.
Yeah, I'm a drummer. My wife is a singer. She teaches voice at NYU, but she joined a band that I was in, and that's how the whole thing got started. But yeah, music has always been an important an important part of my life and growing up. There's always music. But to try and translate, oh yeah, I like music. Oh yeah, I like to write, into something called a musical. I really didn't know what I was doing. I didn't. But I've learned, and even if I say so myself, it's not bad.
But to be fair, I didn't know either. I would say that I had a little more understanding of the musical theater genre than my dad did. But when he says we waded into it, that's a very good description, because we had no outline. We had no narrative. I was like, here's a bunch of songs. Let's just string them together. We'll have it inside of a year. It'll be great.
It was probably two years before we went, hey, what's this about?
Anyway? What's this about? And that's sort of like it. At first, when I first approached it, I almost had this kind of like a concept album idea for it, which is very much, you know, how Hadestown started that way. And Hadestown was always really inspiring to me, because I was in love with the original concept album with Anais Mitchell singing on it, with Bon Iver and Ani DeFranco. And I just loved that album, loved the concept of this like folk opera kind of thing. And so that's kind of where I was working. And so I just originally thought, well, I'll have all of these songs for different moments throughout Anne Boleyn's life, and we'll just tell her life story. And we quickly came to realize that that's kind of boring. You can't just tell a life story. Like, we didn't have an angle. We didn't have like a true narrative. And what are we actually saying? So that took some time to figure out.
Yeah, I mean, we started doing all of this historical research, which is where you have to start somewhere. But it ended up being like, well, this happens, then this happens, then this happens. That's a documentary. That's not a musical. So, okay.
And it's boring. Yeah.
Nobody's going to want to watch this.
Exactly.
So then we kind of took a step back and said, okay, we got to rethink this. Not the music is still there, and the music is fabulous. But it has to tell a story. It has to be emotional. It has to resonate. With an audience. If you don't do that, you don't have anything.
Which maybe seems obvious, but like that's just a sign of our inexperience writing in the genre.
Well, when you're in the middle of it, you literally can't see the forest for the trees. You just can't, because you're just in the weeds. You just don't know where you are or which direction you're headed. But that does, that evolves, and you do get to a point where, okay, I think we know where we are with this. And that's kind of where we are now. Not that there won't be changes. It seems to me that is everything I've read, everything I've heard. If it's not changing, something's wrong.
What do they say? That great expression, shows, musicals are not written, they're rewritten.
They're rewritten.
It's so true. It's amazing.
If it gives you some insight, I'm going to quote one of my favorite teachers from college. We did a musical theater show together. One day we were like a month away from the premiere, and she sat the whole cast down and she said, "Let me tell you one thing. Musical theater is for people on acid or another drug, because who the hell starts singing and dancing out of the blue?" And that really stuck with me. So I understand you when you say it's not a play. It's not a play with music. It's not. It's a whole new weird thing. And so I understand where you're coming from. And it's really, really crazy. And I have one question for you, Jesse. Mm-hmm. Why the hell Anne Boleyn? Like, out of the blue, you were in that night, and you were like, Anne Boleyn, from the Tower of London. Let's write something.
How much time do we have?
How much time do you have? No, I, I don't know. I truly don't know. I don't know where it came from. Like I said, I had not watched or read anything about her. I think I had watched, I've seen it many times. I'd rewatched the movie Elizabeth with Kate Blanchett, but probably a good 6 months before. So I don't know where she came from. I will say that I've always been fascinated by her story. Ever since, I think, you know, in this country, we don't, in high school, we don't have much time to like really dive into the histories of other countries. You spend like a second, and I don't know how it is now, but you spend like a very minuscule amount of time on the history of other nations. And so I remember getting a little bit of British history, but it was all very surface, and it was on the way to just learning American history, because it's all you really have time for. And then when I got to college, I was able to take a Western civilization course, but you know, you only have so many credits available to you. And so everything that I've researched and read about her has all just been kind of on my own. But I remember I was probably about fourth grade, which is, you know, you're about 9 or 10, when I first heard the story of Henry VIII and his 6 wives and how he had his, you know, second wife beheaded. And I remember in my 10-year-old brain, first of all, I was trying to like wrap my mind around this idea of being beheaded, first of all, and like just kind of not understanding. But I remember thinking, what? Like, that's crazy. This one, what everything this one man said was law. And what? And how could he kill his wife? And I just remember just being kind of like morbidly fascinated with that at 10 years old. And so anytime growing up, I would see there'd be like a new movie or a new show or a book about like the Tudors or Henry or Anne, I would read it or I'd watch it because I thought it was always really interesting. And I thought that it was really amazing how this woman rose to become the most powerful woman in the land when she herself was not from royalty. I mean, you could trace her lineage a little bit back to like Edward the whatever third, but who couldn't? Anyway, it's all very incestuous British history. The monarchy is kind of incestuous. But anyway, I always was in love with her story, and I never imagined writing anything about her. Which is why that idea was so strange. But I'm glad that I did, because I've loved learning about her and I've loved writing about her.
And I would add to that that once upon a time, not lately, that small bit of English history was fairly well known. I mean, most people knew about it. It's astounding to me that you can actually run into people today and you say Anne Boleyn and they go, who? And to me, it's like, what, you live under a rock or something? How could you not know? Because this is a story that has endured for 500 years, despite the fact that Henry VIII tried to erase her from history. That didn't really work out for him.
That's the most amazing part.
Which is why you do find a lot of historical sources with where Henry wrote things and that sort of thing, but you have very little that Anne Boleyn actually wrote herself, because they destroyed most of it. So the fact that he tried to do that, and 500 years down the road, and it's still fascinating. Mm-hmm. So it's something that just sticks with you. Once you start to learn a little bit, at least for me, once you learn a little bit, you want to know more. What really happened? How could it come to this? And do it in an interesting and different kind of way. So this is the challenge.
Yeah, she had quite the impact, Anne Boleyn. And you know, one thing that I always thought was interesting is that I feel like you can generally like walk down the street and say to someone, who is Anne Boleyn? And you know, if you get a, you know, recognition of that name, they might say, oh yeah, she had her head cut off. That's kind of the one thing people remember.
Yeah, but
if you say, who's Catherine Howard? I mean, this is a pre-6 world. A lot of music theater fans now know who Catherine Howard is because of that show. But before that, I think the average person, you'd say, who's Catherine Howard? You probably wouldn't get any glimmer of recognition there. But mm-hmm. she also was beheaded by mm-hmm. Henry VIII. And so what is it about Anne Boleyn that is different? And that's kind of where we're at.
So In terms of the creative process and all the research you had to do, what are the perspectives of the events that you are using to tell the story? Because you just said that if you only said the story of Anne Boleyn, it was going to be a documentary and probably it was going to be boring. So what is that plot twist or that magic thing you both worked on to make it interesting and making try to catch the audience?
I can start with this one.
Go ahead. Okay.
And first of all, I'll say first, it's things we're still figuring out. But I think the angle that we are now going for is, well, we're trying to paint as accurate a picture as possible. We're trying to depict the events as historically accurately as we can. But what we are trying to do is make Anne Boleyn she is the one driving the bus. She is the one who is the protagonist. She's getting her own story, because so often you think of Anne Boleyn as just, you know, being part of Henry's circle. You have these women kind of just circling Henry like he is the sun, you know, and I think this is interesting to give Anne her own agency and make her the one who is not just reacting to things, but she's the one who is, you know, pulling the strings. And so I think that that's kind of the angle we're going for, this woman who was quite far ahead of her time and really wanted a say over her own life and her own destiny. And she was determined to not be used and abused and tossed off, and she was determined to be worthwhile. And I think while many women at the time probably had those feelings, that longing for agency, it was so difficult for them to achieve it. And you know, you could say that many people believe that Anne came to the English court like hell-bent on stealing another woman's husband. And she was like ready to do what she had to do to like put the crown on her like vain head, and she didn't care who she like stomped on along the way. We don't believe that's what happened. So I think she sort of inadvertently happened to her, and eventually she did what she had to do. She took a situation that was spiraling out of control with Henry when he was trying to get her and courting her, and she realized he wasn't going away. I think she decided to then make the most of those circumstances. So that's sort of, does that answer your question? The sort of angle we're giving it. Do you want to add to that, Dan?
Well, it's just in the sense that most of the way that Anne has been depicted in the last 400 years, we are, and also not that we just made this up, but based on historical works that have been done, especially in the last 8 to 10 years, where she was not a, you know, manipulative, ambitious, just, you know, completely devoid of emotion kind of person, and all she wanted was to get ahead and to
Well, to
somebody.
Quote a contemporary source, a quote, the goggle-eyed whore.
Yes,
was what yes. She was called
yes,
by a contemporary
yes.
source, yeah.
But, you know, she was refined, she was very educated, she was talented, she had a lot to offer. She was not royalty, but she had that something special. I guess they would call it the it factor
today. The je ne sais quoi,
yeah, whatever, yeah,
put your finger on.
She
yes,
had something
she
because,
had
because she was very interesting to men, and if you were interesting to men, that's what you needed to be back in the 1500s. If you
but
weren't
not
interesting,
too interesting
but not but just falling just short of, you know, making them want more, or maybe want something that they couldn't have.
Mm.
She was just very, she was very alluring that way. And ultimately, she did what she could to use that to her advantage, but not in the way that it is depicted in most stories with her.
Thank
we
you.
Say we say that that's wrong, and we're right.
You could argue back and forth with people.
Yes,
there are many people that have, you know, different opinions on her and the role that she played. We tend to feel that she she's not the villainous concubine that everyone likes to portray her as, this conniving, like, deviant. We don't
and
think
we
so.
Think that is interesting.
Yeah.
We do.
Interesting, but that's the image that endures. Because it's sexy, it's spicy, people love, it's tabloid journalism, and that's what sells, and it somehow is less interesting. People think it's less interesting that maybe she wasn't that deviant. Somehow that doesn't tell as sensational a story, but we think it tells a more sensational, more interesting story, actually.
That is amazing, and I know that it must be great to give that perspective to such a villainous historical character. I want to talk about now about production. Mm-hmm. How has it been? I know that you've released and recorded some songs, but are you going to release a cast recording? Are you going to try to do a pro shot or walk me through the production of what you've done at the moment.
Sure. So at this point, like I think we said, it's been in the works for about 4.5 years. And we've done, in the pre-COVID world, we did quite a number of showcases and we did readings, and it was really, it was getting somewhere. And then everything has, taken a couple steps back in the last 6 to 8 months, but we've been trying to stay really forward thinking and we're trying to stay creative. So yeah, we have a number of videos and song demos that are coming out or rolling out slowly with some really phenomenal Broadway singers. I don't want to give anything away because we have some fun surprises coming in the next few weeks and months, but because we want to, keep presenting the new material and keep people excited. Yes, Broadway is shut down kind of indefinitely. Live theater is not happening really in the sense that we're all used to, but I don't think that's any reason for us to stop being creative. And yes, I would love to do a cast recording. We had talked about that, and then we really haven't been back to that since COVID sort of stopped everything. But we're still working. We've done some virtual readings. We have more virtual readings on the books. They've all been like private internal readings. It would be great if we could get a public one at some point when we feel like the material is ready. But yeah, I mean, at this point, the show is, it's feeling really cohesive, and I'm excited about where all the music is at. I just, even over the past summer, I wrote like 3 or 4 new songs that for moments that we found that needed something. Like I said, I think I have like 75 songs in total for this show. They're not all in the show, but like I've written that many, and just trying to find what fits. So I feel like right now what we're looking at is just this big, jigsaw puzzle, and we're just sort of assembling things right now. And every time we read it, we learn more. Every time we do a virtual reading, we learn. Those are really enlightening. So we're just, we're gonna keep working and keep releasing stuff, and hopefully get, people will still just continue to be excited about it, even though live theater is still, on pause for right now. Do you want to add to that, Dan?
I think we're doing our best to take advantage of this pause. It is giving us an opportunity to possibly maybe just slow down just a little bit, because as you just heard, Jesse has about 75 songs. That's typically too many.
This is usually too many.
That's a little too many.
By about 40.
but even so, as we learn through these readings and sort of things, I mean, this is a historical kind of thing, and especially me, I'm trying to be as historically accurate as possible, because that's kind of my thing. But we have had to mess with the timeline a little bit. We've had to leave some historical characters who were very important at the time during the whole, when the thing actually happened. People like Thomas Cranmer and Thomas More, who were very important, but they had to go to the cutting room floor. I mean, we just didn't
have room.
Everyone's
named Thomas, by the way.
Yeah, everybody's named Thomas. It's crazy.
We've got
6 Thomases in the show. I don't know what it was about that name. But it was, it's the kind of thing where it's given us the opportunity to to just kind of refine things where and not rush anything. We want to keep moving forward, but we're trying to use this time to our advantage rather than thinking of it as, oh my God, are we wasting our time?
A lot of people feel
that way. Now they just feel like the whole world has stopped and it's never going to start again. Well, that's not true. I've been around a long time. I've seen a lot of crap, and things do pass, and this too will pass.
And one thing that our director said to us in the last draft was, we're trying to kind of get into the holes of history, like get into the private moments that were not recorded. Because there is a lot that survives, like source material that survives from, you know, contemporary accounts and chroniclers. But what I think is more interesting is what was not chronicled. And I think that's where we're kind of really unleashing our creativity. And so it's been really lovely to have just a little bit of extra still time, creative time, where we feel like we've been able to just dive in deeper. There's no deadline we're kind of rushing toward at this point. So we're just creating.
Creating and taking it easy. And I'm really excited for what's to come, because I've listen a lot of times to the song you released with Jane Bruce. Mm-hmm. I had her in a previous episode here because I met her in January, and her talent is just overwhelming. She is amazing, and I'm really excited that you're going to keep releasing songs.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a nice way to keep active something that unfortunately due to COVID had to be shut down so violently.
Yeah, that's what my director said. Like, even though theater has kind of stopped, it doesn't mean that creativity has stopped. The muse has not stopped.
Last thing I want to talk about is, what are the future plans for both of you? Like, Steve, you've just immersed yourself in script writing. Are you gonna try that again? Or are you?
Immersed is a good word, because when I'm not doing other things, which I have where I work, I still work. I have a job. I have to do that. but beyond that, it is, it's this kind of project for me anyway. I mean, other people are different, but for me, I need to focus. I need to focus on one major thing, and this is such a big thing, because we're covering the last 11 years of Anne Boleyn's life. 11 years is a long time to cover.
Yeah,
and especially when people don't know, but they will if they see the show. It took 7 years from the time Henry wanted to bring Anne into his life to the time they got married. 7 years.
Yeah. Okay?
And then the rest of it kind of went pretty fast after that, comparatively speaking. So to try and sift through all of the information and what makes sense to our story and what doesn't, kind of thing, it is a very immersive kind of thing. Beyond that, I do have a novel I wish to finish that is also historical in nature, a little more recent history. And I also, I'm going to try my hand at a script that has to do with Oliver Wendell Holmes and his group of people like Henry David Thoreau, and all these guys knew each other back in the 18th century, and there was a movement called the Transcendental Movement that was a weird thing that a lot of people don't know about, but it's a very interesting it's an interesting story. I don't know what the plot is yet, but I'll get there.
I think you will. And for you, Jesse.
So in addition to Boleyn, I do have another musical that I have written this year that is actually just launched the social media for it yesterday, because I've been keeping it sort of quiet. I have been writing it for almost a year, and it's about, if anyone is a fan of Wuthering Heights and the Bronte sisters, it is about Emily Bronte as she is writing her great creation, Wuthering Heights, a classic novel. And so it's about her journey as a, you know, a female writer in the 1800s with a masculine pseudonym, and her kind of wild and boundless imagination that these characters she's writing, they just jump off the page as she is writing them. And so it kind of tells this doomed story of her, the lovers Kathy and Heathcliff, through just a different lens, through Emily Bronte's eyes. So that's in the process. If the world were not kind of shut down right now, I would say that show is relatively workshop ready. I feel really good about where it is. And then I had actually another idea for another musical the other week that I may be co-writing with a friend of mine that I don't quite know what it is yet, but there's something happening with it. I don't know.
There's something cooking up.
Exactly. It's early days, but I just love to write. I just want to write as much as I possibly can for as long as I can.
Well, thank you, the both of you. I know that either your new musicals or your novel, Steve, will be a success. Thank you so much for being here.
From your lips to God's ears, as they say.
I'm really happy to have you both here, and I cannot wait for what's to come for Bolin. I'll definitely be checking out social media platforms for the new songs and whatever you release, because I love the first song and I know it's gonna be a success, and hopefully we can take it to a Broadway or off Broadway house.
Please,
best wishes on there. And
thank you for your time and interest, and I hope we can talk again.
Yeah, for your sure. Your support, you know, people like you, it's just we creators, we need people to support our work. I mean, as much as we want to say, I mean, sometimes I do feel like writing itself is a reward, of course. The creative process is wonderfully fulfilling, but I'd be lying if I said I didn't want my creations to never leave my house. You know, you want people to get excited about your material and have it resonate with someone somewhere. So that is just really, I'm very grateful to you and people like you. It's just, we really need you. So thank you.
And trust me, I'll do my best to do as much sound I can to this musical.
Thank you so much.
Do you have any last words before we go?
No, just thanks again. And I hope you will, hope you keep following us. And then we'll, we really, it's hard work. You know that? It is hard work. So to have anyone show appreciation and interest in it is definitely a blessing. Thank you.
I agree. I would also say thank you, and thank you to the listeners for tuning in, and hope that you'll follow us, and you know, we'll have some more exciting and fun content very, very soon.
Before we go, where can they follow you? What social media platforms are you using?
Fantastic. So both the Bolin page, we have a Bolin on Instagram. It's at Bolin Musical. It's also the same for YouTube, YouTube/Bolin Musical. We also have a Facebook page, Bolin Musical. You can find my website at jessietomskomusic.com. There's also a tab on the page for Bolin. And they can find, people can find my personal Instagram is at jessietomsko. That's kind of my writing page. And then I also have a Facebook page, Jessie Tomsko. And if they want to follow the new show that I'm working on, it's on Instagram at In Emily's Words.
And I almost forgot one question I always ask my guests. Top five for the both of you. I'm not going to restrict it to musical theater, but top five theater or musical theater shows. Go.
Okay, I'll go. God, it's so hard. Okay. I'm gonna just like fangirl for Stephen Sondheim because that's what it is. Sweeney Todd, Into the Woods, Sunday in the Park with George are the top three. And then I would say, I love the mystery of Edwin Drood, and I love The Secret Garden. And I think those are my top five.
Well, four of those are mine. Secret Garden, those three Sondheims, but I like Guys and Dolls.
Oh, yeah.
Classic Guys and Dolls. Lovely.
I do love that one.
It's great. It's great.
I do think Adelaide's Lament is probably one of the most perfect music theater songs ever written.
Well, yeah. Thank you so much. It's been
thank
really
you, Martin.
Fun. It's been really, really
awesome.
Fun. So let's talk soon. I'm really excited for the both of you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Nice to meet you, Martin.
Nice to meet
bye-bye.
You, too.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to this new episode of Backstage Talk. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Backstage Talk Podcast.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.